If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this special episode of Mind Pump, the world's top fitness, health, and entertainment podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We answered some health and fitness questions, but the way we open the episode is with an introductory portion. It's where we talk about current events, what's happening in the world, what's happening in our lives. In today's episode, that intro portion was 43 minutes long. By the way, if you go to mindpumppodcast.com, you can see the entire podcast timestamp, so you can fast forward to your favorite parts, probably when I'm talking, anytime.
Every time.
So here's the breakdown of today's episode. We opened up by talking about morning workouts and how much I do them and they don't. Then we talked about, Justin talked about sucking out snake venom for his friend. Then we talked about—
I didn't do that.
Bee venom therapy on the show Unwell on Netflix. Great show. Check it out. Kind of weird. Then Adam talked about recommending blue light blocking glasses to his friend to help him sleep. By the way, we work with a company called Felix Gray. They make the best blue light blocking glasses around for two reasons. Number one,
the most stylish.
They don't change the color of everything, so you're not watching your TV in red or orange. They are clear, but they're effective. Number two, what Justin said, they're very stylish. And because you listen to Mind Pump, you can get free shipping and free returns. Just go to felixgrayglasses.com. That's F-E-L-I-X-G-R-A-Y glasses.com/mindpump. Then we talked about the documentary on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. Highly, highly recommend everybody go
Please
watch that.
Please go watch it.
Then we talked about the potential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Oh, my God. Can we make this happen?
Please, everybody, just let's make it happen. Let's sign petitions. This would be amazing. Then we talked about the future of the fitness space, or in specifically the gym space. I talked about Jillian Michaels getting coronavirus from her friend and then blaming it on gyms. Then we talked about getting enough nutrients.
Here's a wealth of knowledge.
Even when your calories are low. So if you cut your calories, you're also cutting your micronutrients. Now, one way to help this out is to eat much more nutrient-dense foods. The other way you can do this is by supplementing with a multivitamin. Now, the problem with multivitamins is most of them suck. They're not regulated. They don't have what they say they have in them.
Very true.
This is why we work with Legion. Legion makes high-performance supplements. They're all third-party tested. No artificial sweeteners. They're good. It's good. They're good supplements. Good stuff. And they have a great multivitamin as well as other products. And again, because you listen to Mind Pump, you get a huge discount. If you go to legionathletics.com, that's L-E-G-I-O-N, athletics.com/mindpump, use the code MindPump, you get 20% off your first order. And if you're a returning customer, you get double rewards points. So use the code every time you go to Legion. That was the first 43 minutes. Then we got into the questions. Here's the first one. This person says, look, I've heard some trainers say that planks aren't good because they promote bad posture. What's the deal with that? Second question, this person is a trainer getting certified by NASM, and they're saying, look, you guys always talk about not static stretching before workouts, but I feel like I read in NASM's workbooks that you should do some static stretching before strength training. What's the deal with that? By the way, we talk a lot about priming in that part of the episode because we think priming is the best way to get your body ready
Superior.
To work out. It connects your body. You improve your strength, your performance, and your mobility for better workouts. It's like adding a turbocharger to your workouts. You can actually go and watch one of our free webinars where Justin teaches you how to prime properly. Go to mapsprimewebinar.com. The next question, this person says, look, I have knocking knees. What are some of the exercises they could do to fix that? And the final question, this person wants to know what we think about float therapy. Also, look, Mind Pump is the top fitness podcast, but another thing that we do is we produce amazing workout programs designed for all kinds of different people. So if you want to build a lot of muscle and strength, we have programs like MAPS Anabolic or MAPS Powerlift. If you like to be strong and functional, you can check out something like MAPS Performance. If you like to do odd lifts and you like to focus on your posterior chain, that's your butt, your hamstrings, your back, we have MAPS Strong and many, many other workout programs. Go to mapsfitnessproducts.com. Find the one that suits your body, your goals, your needs. Sign up, follow the program, and blow yourself away.
T-shirt time! And it's t-shirt time.
Oh, shit, Doug. It's my favorite time of the week. I got smoke all in my throat. Jesus.
Woo. Yeah.
You're straining
raspy.
There.
Wow. All right. We have four winners this week. Two for Apple Podcasts, two for Facebook. The Apple Podcast winners are Caro Musa and Jonah M. Fitness. For Facebook, we have Sam Mellert and Lorenzo Codillo. All of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes at mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
I always forget that when I squat heavy and like an idiot forget, like, oh, I'm going to be sitting in a car driving or flying in a plane the next day.
You don't want to squat and then be stationary.
No, like especially like a heavy, right? Like if you're doing like mobility or like, you know, something like their lightweight work, but it's like, oh, I just had to go a little heavy like yesterday.
You go all the way up to 135?
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. It was a hard 135 though. Real slow. Real slow
full
tempo.
Plate. Yeah.
Body weight.
Yeah. Real hard. No, my hips are like, oh, driving on the way home or way back today. Oh,
I used to make that mistake when we go fly. I'm like, I got to get it in before and go hard and hammer it. And then you sit there forever. It just locks you up. And then you're just trying to walk around with all this stupid pain.
I haven't squatted heavy in so long. Because I'm trying to fix some imbalances, but
you've been on that kick for a minute.
I've been on it for a while, and then I went and tried challenging my mobility with squats and hurt myself. So I guess there's more work to be done. What's going on?
I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out.
You know, the problem is I wake up early in the morning to work out, so I'll wake up at like 6 and I'll be out in the garage by 6:30, 6:45. But the problem is, especially when the kids are with me, is that I only have like 50 minutes. I have 50 minutes to finish my workout, and so it's hard to get it all, like the right amount of priming and all that stuff ahead of time to do the workout. So I'll do some, but it's not enough, dude.
Yeah. All right, what time are you consistently lifting at, Justin? What's
probably like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
When you get home?
Yeah, when I get home. Okay. Yeah, that's usually when I do. I've abandoned the whole idea of doing morning workouts. I know.
I want to be that guy too.
I do too. Sal's had success.
It does take a lot of discipline.
Yeah. Forget that, dude. I like sleep. I'm more into that idea. Yeah.
I've just never been a morning person. You're the guy who wakes up and blasts music at 6 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm not that. I'm like, it's got to be a good hour and a half before like I'm. And I'm,
it's
you know,
like
it's
a
funny.
Light switch for
this
you.
This is what I'm. This is my son. Like, okay, so he's getting now to this age where little bits of the personality or things come out. Like, he's for sure me in the morning.
Oh, really? He's not all happy and stuff.
I mean, he's. I don't think I'm not happy.
You're pretty negative.
But
dude, I'm a grumpopotamus.
You and Justin both are in bad moods when you wake up.
I
can't even.
I can tell too because I'll start talking to you guys and Justin makes this. Thing he does this thing with his eyes, like he's trying to like shut out my voice with his eyes. He's like, ugh.
Yeah, because it feels like I'm getting blasted, you know.
I don't think I'm angry. I just think that like you know this massive machinery up here. It takes a while to warm up. You know, saying it takes a while to get
really
it
really big
get
cogs,
get it processing. You know, and then when someone like sounds like, hey, what's going on? He's like talking to you all fat. You're like, whoa, bro, coffee. Yeah. I'm like halfway through my cup.
I gotta put some gasoline in here first.
Yeah, Doug wakes up all right. You're okay in the morning, right? That's why you and I usually room together. I could leave you though. You'll sleep if you're left alone.
Yeah, I like mornings in bed.
Yeah,
laying in bed still.
I can't. You know what's fine? I can't necessarily sleep in. I'll try, but about the latest I can sleep in till is about 6:45, 7 a.m.
Wow.
And then I'm just
ew.
Yeah, I'm just laying there. I'm like, what's going on? So I got to get up. But it's not that I enjoy. I prefer to work out in the afternoon. It's just it doesn't happen consistently if I do it. I just 100% I will miss at least one a week if I do it in the afternoon. Yeah. Do it in the morning, it's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's true. There's variables that come into play.
Dude, I go online sometimes and I Google weird news. You ever do that?
all
the time.
Oh, it's fun, right?
Yeah.
So do you guys know what one of the, like, if you get bit by a snake, a poisonous snake, one of the first
suck it out.
That's one of the first things you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, I think.
No, it is. It's true. You're supposed to cut. I think you just cut an X over the wound.
Yeah, and then suck it.
Really?
And then you put like a suction device, or your friend sucks out the venom, or you can if you can reach it.
I thought that was like an urban legend.
No. No, that's a. That's
I hope
a,
it's not.
Because I don't want to get tricked. You know what I mean? Yes.
No, it says right here. I looked
it up.
Help
me.
It says cut X's over the fang marks and suck out the venom because it spreads quickly and efficiently through the lymphatic system. So it's, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. But anyway,
I thought you're supposed to pee on it.
No, that's the other thing.
That's a jellyfish. If a jellyfish stings you, you piss on it.
You imagine,
well, my friend got almost bit died, by a snake. So that makes sense now.
Pulls his thing out, starts peeing on you.
Just start whizzing on.
Whoa, bro! It's not a jellyfish. What, it's a snake.
This is what you do.
So literally, I'm dying, and you guys are pissing on me.
Yeah.
So I read this article. This is like the worst nightmare. This is the worst nightmare for
stung by a jellyfish and bit by a snake.
No, dude. That's
a fun combo.
In Thailand, this university student, this kid, his name is Sirapop. He, 18-year-old kid, sits down on the toilet, and there was a snake in the toilet, bit him in the dick.
Okay, wait a second.
Whoa.
How do you sit on a toilet and not see a snake in the toilet?
I think they hide.
I feel like it's everybody's worst nightmare.
Yes. Well, first of all, it could be the dark, you know, like you do it in the dark, right, Adam? Yeah, when you wake up in the morning or at night, you sit on the toilet. You don't see what's in there, right? So it could have been that. Also, I think, don't they sometimes hide down the pipe a little
bit? Yeah, they go in the pipe sometimes. I've heard about this, yeah.
Yeah,
like, or they'll go in the plumbing.
Or they'll hide under the rim. So you can't really see it unless you look under the heart.
That gives me goosebumps.
Dude, he got bit in his dick. And then that made me think about the venom thing. Like,
right.
we got to be a good friend, dude. Got to be a really good friend.
I'll just tell you how much I love you.
Maybe that's like the level of like what friendship, right? Like, what level are you at? You know, are we there yet? Are we friends? I mean, we've been doing this now for 6 years together. We're like close as best friends can be.
If I get
bit in the dick, which one of you guys are going to help out?
The ultimate gay chicken.
Hey,
if you guys ever played that.
We have to pull straws.
Yeah.
Ah, Doug wins. All right, Doug. Sorry, you got to do it. You imagine you're sweating, you know, because the venom is hurting you and you're sweating, and then your buddy's down there trying to help you out and your wife walks by. What the fuck?
I mean, on the plus side, you go to the ER and it's like, man, you're packing some heat.
Yeah.
Wow. We haven't seen one.
Yeah, we haven't seen one like this in a long time. Swollen to
purple.
We got three testicles.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that series on Netflix? Just reminded me of it. Is it Unwell?
Unwell.
Have you guys seen that? I think we talked a little bit about it.
A few episodes.
You brought up the breast milk one.
Yeah.
Yes. So I saw that one. I saw the bee sting one.
Oh, yeah. The bee sting. Yeah. So bee venom. Yeah. They went all into that with all kinds of different versions, like with the lady that actually put it in like makeup and products and stuff like that. Yeah. It was interesting, actually, to see what they were doing with bee venom.
Well, I went down the rabbit hole and started researching. Bee venom has been, products from bees have been used for thousands of years in lots of different cultures. But venom in particular has been used as a way to treat pain. And apparently when you get stung by a bee, it elicits this pain-killing response from the body and anti-inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
So as a treatment for things like arthritis, apparently it actually has some value.
But it like gives you temporary relief, though.
Yes.
So really? Are you going to go get stung every time to just relieve your pain?
I don't know. It's weird, right? Some people are saying
how great. Ice bath might be a better approach, I would think.
Advil.
Yeah.
Advil has the same thing. But
take some Advil.
Yeah.
Stinging.
But then there's in the makeup, so then they interviewed this cosmetic skincare scientist, and they said that when you rub it in your skin, that it does cause a minor swelling effect, which then fills in the lines. So you do look, for 12 hours, you do look like you have less wrinkles.
So it's another way to get, what's that other, the injections that people get? Botox. It's like another way to kind of get that just from the cream.
Yeah.
You know, this reminds me of the conversation I had this weekend with we went up to the house. We had a couple couples with us that we hadn't hung out in a while. And whenever I don't see people for a while, the questions I always get, especially when we start talking about mind pump and what you guys are doing and partners you work with and biohacking stuff comes up. Everybody always wants to ask me about like all the, you know, what do you think about hyperbaric chambers and cryotherapy?
Yeah, microdosing.
And it's because it's crazy. I forget in the last like 5 to 10 years, like how much like the biohacking like space has blown up. Like that wasn't even a thing when we were trainers early on, but now you get everyday people that it trickles to them and they're like, oh man, I heard this about recovery. I heard this is amazing for building muscle or burning fat. And they have all these questions. I said, you know, I'm going to tell you the same thing that I tell everybody. And we're sponsored by some of these brands that could fall kind of the biohacking category. I'm like, handle the big rocks first. Like before you go to a hyperbaric chamber and spend, you know, $75 or $100 for a visit, or cryotherapy, $40, probably a visit to go do that. Like knock out your sleep, right? Get your sleep quality. I said, we were this company. I said, that does blue blockers. I said, it's going to sound cheesy. I said, my parents used to, you know, during my parents, like, you know, their 30s or whatever like that, blue blockers were a big deal. We used to make fun of them and stuff. And I'm like, but that is one a small hack. It costs you, you know, $50 to $100 to invest in a pair of them. And because you guys both are like huge tech guys, I'm like, I'm the same way, or I'm on my computer late at night. I'm like, do something as simple as that. One time purchase, you do that. Make a habit of a good sleep routine. I guarantee you that will make a bigger difference than, you know, 7-10 visits to cryotherapy or hyperbaric chambers.
Yeah, there's some methods that really do have some impact like that.
Right.
That
we've found. The best biohacks that work, that give you the most effective, you know, result, or not the biohacks themselves, but rather the biohacks that improve your ability to get better sleep, eat better, or exercise better. Those are the biohacks. Right. So blue light blocking glasses, first off, if you're on a computer all day long, there's definitely some benefit in the blocking of the blue light by itself, because they can fatigue the eyes, can cause headaches, and maybe some damage. There's some evidence that there may be damage from long-term exposure. But the sleep effects, it's not the blue light blocking biohack itself. It's the fact that it helps you sleep better, and then the benefits come from the sleep.
Well, that was the
you
point.
See what I'm saying?
This is the point that I was making with them, is like, we before I went to the blue blockers, the thing that the conversation was going was like, they just like to buy these things, yeah, right? Stuff they want to try out. I'm like, listen, go after your diet first, your exercise consistency, and your sleep and stress, right? I said, those four things, like, manage those first. And if you want to buy something, I was like, if you want to buy something to try, I'm like, that's where I point them in the direction of blue blockers. I'm like, yeah, try these, make it a habit that as soon as the sun goes down, you put them on, regardless if you're going to be on the computer or TV or not, just get in the habit of that routine and report back to me on what your sleep feels like.
How I feel about all these kinds of products. If it allows you to then, if you have barriers in front of working out or moving, like you have all this pain that you have to address before you can even like try to get into like mobility practices and all these types of things. Like that's where tools, I do, you know, lean into that and recommend people kind of venture into like self-myofascial release and like these other techniques and things to alleviate. So that way you can now put yourself in a better position. So you can find some of those like biohacking yes. techniques that do have value. And the bee venom thing is kind of interesting with that, with arthritis, but that's really, you know, like they do a good job of like kind of showing the extremes of it and where it's like not going well. And you know, what another version of venom actually that I found was interesting, they were using snake venom to actually lower blood pressure. And so that's another valid thing that they're testing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Isn't that weird though?
Died, but look at his blood pressure. through the floor.
Yeah, tying back to the snake venom in the penis pipe.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, if you do a biohack that helps you eat better, exercise more consistently, get better sleep, that's the most valuable biohack.
Right, or reduce stress.
Right. Or, you know, that's the best way to use them. In and of themselves, look, I have a buddy right now who is trying to conceive. And, you know, they were trying for about 7 or 8 months. And finally, they went and got their fertility tested. Yeah. And his test came back that he had a very, very low sperm count. Okay. So first thing he does, he sends me a message. Hey, oh, you know, Sal, what supplements do you think can help me increase my sperm count? So I'm recommending certain herbs and stuff. And I said, but you know, how's your sleep? Let's talk about that for a second. So talked about sleep, talked about diet. So I convinced him to try changing his sleep and improving his diet. So now he makes it a priority to get good sleep. Whereas before he wasn't, he was just wired all day long on caffeine. He's one of those like go, go, go kind of guys. Very successful guy.
Yeah.
Wasn't taking sleep seriously. Now he started having a sleep routine an hour before bed or 2 hours before bed. And he's prioritized that. His diet has changed a little bit. And in, 45 days, his sperm count increased by 20 million just from that.
Wow.
There's no herb that's going to do that. There's no supplement that's going to do that, that's going to have that kind of an impact. So it just goes back to—
Just summoned a whole army there.
What?
He summoned a whole army there.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, speaking of shows, did you guys get a chance to watch that Social Dilemma yet?
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, that was good, bro.
Yeah, so Courtney is literally— deleted Facebook and Instagram after watching. I was jealous.
So I'm just a little upset that I couldn't get like an apology from you guys because I mean,
because you're Adam Atler references.
I mean, for 3.5 years now, I've been touting that on this show, and I to the point where I believe I've been teased quite a few times about it.
I haven't heard Joe Rogan mention it not too long ago.
I know, just like a couple weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about it, right?
Right. Yeah. Joe Rogan mentioned it first.
Yeah. No, there's proof. There's a recording of me talking about that.
There's
book.
Plenty of proof. There's lots of
But I mean, even like, first of all, I mean, a lot of that stuff. And also, by the way, so what I liked about the Social Dilemma is the book iGen, it does a lot more of that, where it gets into the statistics, the analytics, and everything like that. So, but man, it's it is wild what they are capable to do, man.
Well, the thing, so as I'm watching it, I'm trying to check myself, right? I'm watching it, and it definitely will invoke some fear.
Yeah.
Because social media does a very good job of amplifying human behavior and human impulse.
Mm-hmm.
It does an exceptional job of doing that.
It tracks all that.
It does a very, its job is to do that. In fact, it's trying to gain your attention. And so whatever keeps you there the most and keeps you the most engaged is what the AI is going to continue to produce.
And nothing does that better than conflict.
Conflict or fear or wow or what's going on. So what it's doing is it's just amplifying human behavior and human impulse. And what that does is it tends to radicalize people.
Yep.
And you're seeing this, right? You're seeing people become more and more extreme with their beliefs. But here's my problem. My problem is that they blame social media. That's like blaming capitalism for greed. Like, these are human behaviors. It's a tool. Eliminate it. We'll create another one.
Yeah.
That's going to keep doing that. So the only solution is for people to become – it's like processed food.
Right. But people still need to be aware what that is and how they're profiting off of it.
Well, not just that, but be aware of your own behavior and what's that. It's like processed foods. Like, let's blame processed foods. Should we ban it all? No. You got to make the choices yourself.
So I don't – so I mean, I still stand by what I've said since the beginning, which is like it doesn't scare me. It doesn't. I don't blame social media, or I don't look at them like they're evil. It's like that's their job to keep you engaged, to make more money. I mean, think about this. Like, I don't know about you guys, but when I'm watching, like, we do this. Okay, so why Facebook leads are so successful for us is because they're targeted with these algorithms. They have the ability to go, oh, somebody who's trying to get abs. You know, we have the ads that we give a free guide away to these people, and you can clone an audience of the type of people that would be reading this material. And Facebook has all that analytics because of that. If you were to take away this tool, we would hurt unbelievably. I mean, it would crush our business.
You know, and I tend to agree with you guys like most of the time, but I do see an inherent problem with young minds, young impressionable minds that don't have barriers and walls of manipulation figured out yet that they're totally using and abusing. We used to have this for the way that you market in to kids and things on TV, and all those walls are being undercut and knocked down because, you know, this is where they're hanging out. They're hanging out here and they're getting fed all this bullshit constantly because this is what they're following. And now the algorithms figure out how to then radicalize the ideas of these kids. And I have like a very big problem with that.
Yeah. Well, again, it's the genie's out. It's like, this is like any innovation, the genie's out. Right. So we are the ones that are responsible for our kids and our own behaviors. Being aware is a big one. Like, you can navigate the world and not be, like, for example, right? We have a world that's designed to keep you sedentary because that's what we want. We want to not do stuff.
Right.
We like to relax. And also have this really convenient, tasty, processed food all around us. That means that a lot of people are going to be obese, but you can still choose to live in a way that prevents that. It's just a choice. It's harder. It's just a choice.
Yeah.
So now we have this social media, these AI algorithms that continue to keep your attention. And what they do inadvertently is they continue to radicalize or strengthen extreme ideas. So conspiracies, fake news. You can see this with politics. Both sides have actually become a little bit more extreme because that's what gets people's attention. So, and it's interesting. There was a quote in that documentary where they said, I don't remember who said it. It was a really good quote, something like, human progress consistently teeters between complete self-destruction and progress. And it made me think of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Like, we invented nukes and we got so damn close with destroying ourselves. And then we didn't, and we became
people. Well, this is what happens when we live like somewhere so progressive, right? We're always going to be stretching the limits on things. And I think part of what we're going through right now, the feeling that we have, and definitely like the feeling that Justin is speaking to, is we're really finding out right now.
Yeah.
So I think that it's no different than when we really understood how bad cigarettes were for you.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. So we had the guy on the show that was like basically like the tech advocate, right, which was making a really great argument about, you know, putting the responsibility back on the individual. However, we've seen how this has played out, and this is not like, this is not something people are picking up on. Like, they need more information, they need more education to be able to combat what is already a really strong pull for people, and they're playing and preying off of people's tendencies and weaknesses. Well, like, they're not even aware of it.
I get where you're going, because, and here's the thing too, and I was drawing the parallel to cigarettes, where it's really not, because your kids are given iPads in school now. They're given these tools. They're encouraged to use these tools. Mm-hmm. They've got shows on the streaming television or their iPad. So it's different than like marketing, you know, alcohol or cigarettes to them, where there's other barriers to keep them from getting addicted to that, where these tools are encouraged. They're encouraged at a very young age. And so I can get where you're coming from, Justin, that it is a little scarier when you think about children with it. Like, as far as grown adults, like, it is your responsibility, just like processed food.
Yeah, it's
like,
for sure.
It is your responsibility. But it's like, if your school, like, that's all they fed your kids was processed foods, and they were encouraging them to eat that all the time. I mean, it's like, at some point you got to step in.
Well, the other thing too is it's an easy and prime way for outside players to manipulate the American public. It's very easy.
There's another factor.
Yeah, which is, it's actually quite easy. It's easy for a foreign government or terrorist group or whatever to pose as a business, to post articles, to radicalize people, to you know, to
start protests, you know, just online with groups.
It's already happened.
Yeah, it's documented.
It's already happened. And so what to me, as I watched this documentary, what it really made me think of was this tool, because it connects people so much, right? Now we're really connected. We can hear each other. We can read each other's opinions and comments, and we can share articles. They could go viral, you know, overnight. It's going to amplify humanity. So I think we have some options here. There's almost like two roads here. We're at a fork in the road. Let's amplify humanity. Well, that means there's some good,
right?
And then there's some nasty that we can amplify. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we need to wake up and decide which direction we're going to go.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you got to be aware. This is a big one for me. This is one I'm constantly challenging myself with, because I know just how powerful it is I'm constantly challenging myself and thinking, am I being manipulated right now? Why do I feel so strongly about this article? Or so, is this real? Is this true? Or is this just another narrative? Or am I being...
Yeah, I'm not speaking on just on everybody else's behalf. Like, this happens. I was checking myself on posts and things that I was getting drawn into, and why I was starting to feel visceral feelings about certain things. And it's like purely just preying off of like what they see is like things that I'm afraid of, or like some things I don't agree with, or what I don't like. And so Courtney's like deleted this, and I've been asking her the past few days, like, what have you thought? Like, what's your experience so far? And she's like, I'm a lot more prone to just, you know, when I get bored or think of it, I text one of my friends and I say, hey, how are you doing? And then we get in a conversation and it's real. Yeah. And there's no third party in there trying to pull you in any direction. It's like you're just having a conversation with your friend, like it should be. Yeah. So, like, tell me the weight of social media versus all the other tech innovations. I don't see any value in it.
Yeah, Jessica got rid of hers too. She got rid of her. This is before the documentary. Got rid of her Instagram.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Keeps it active because she has like she was running her business through it, but has the app off her phone. Completely off Facebook for all the reasons that this documentary talked about. She did this a while ago.
Yeah.
And she noticed a huge difference. She's like, my anxiety's lower. Mm-hmm. I feel I don't have my body image is better, because obviously when you're going on, you're seeing, you know, bodies.
Well, back to the quote you said. I mean, I think that's, we're just in that time right now. We went so extreme. Everybody accepted it. That is, it's all good. And I think more and more information is coming out and presenting itself. And I think you're going to see the pendulum will swing back. I don't think we're going to see more and more people getting addicted to it, abusing it. I think people are becoming more aware, and more people are doing that. I mean, I did the same thing this weekend. This weekend, I completely set the phone down, completely, just like was off. I was off text, everything. I was just like, I'm up here. I don't want to do anything. I don't need to work right now. There's always work to be done. I don't want to be on social media. I'm just going to put the phone down and just leave it in my room and just socialize with the people that I'm with. I think more people are starting to do that. Like before, it was so new. It was so amazing that you could connect to these people all over the world. And there's all this information that you can be fed to you all the time. And it's information that you like to read. And I think people are starting to realize that it can be manipulative. So it's now like, okay, I've got to learn to self-regulate. But I do agree with you, Justin, that the area that concerns me is kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that
totally.
is you know,
my biggest concern,
because they're giving, I mean, a lot of schools give iPads, and where we're at right now with education, they're telling them to get on there and they're telling them to use that for Zoom.
Well,
and
even YouTube, like, you know, my daughter will watch YouTube and we put it on the kids friendly one, but still there's an algorithm that'll recommend another video and another video. Mm-hmm. And it's these algorithms that start to push you.
Yeah. And YouTube has it.
Well, that, I thought that was cool on the show. They did talk about, like, okay, how do you kind of, as a person, how do you hack this so you don't get, you know, stuck, cattled into an area, right, where you're just getting biased? And they said one strategy is never click on the videos that are recommended to you, and then always go out of your way to either follow people or look at articles and like articles that are opposing.
With a counterpoint.
Yes.
Yeah. I do that all the time.
Opposing your views.
Have to do that.
If you do that, then because it's a computer, it's doing it. The show made it sound like there's like.
Like there's people that are
like
evil.
There's people that are like, oh, Sal.
You could just like puppies all day long, and then that's all. The only thing that's going to be in your feed.
Right.
So it is really like you could control that and like sort of flip the script, but people just need to be aware of that.
That's it. Yeah. And so I think that's a big way that I think people can already start to. Okay, I'm not going to completely pull myself off of social. I use it for business, or I like it. But we've talked about this. I mean,
I purposely do this. I purposely will follow one page and then find an opposite type of page, or I'll read an article and then I'll try to read an opposing article. And I've done this now for a long time. It actually can feel painful, because especially if you read an article that you really agree with, finding the opposing article, you almost don't want to read it.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. No, but I do it on purpose. Here's an exercise. This is easy. This is easy for the audience. Try this. Open up a tab to CNN and then open up a tab to Fox News and just toggle back and forth between them. I don't care if you're liberal or conservative.
Well, that's why I like that.
You're going to hear a complete opposite story.
It is the most fascinating thing. It's so fascinating because you can clearly see different narratives being painted. Yeah. And if you do this every single day, I promise you, you'll be way more aware than most people around you.
You know what, though? This is why it's so great to be in this country, though. Like, we're not the first people to recognize this issue. And then you have companies that see an opportunity to create a better business, and like the newsletter Flipside, which aggregates that for you, right? They grab information from the left and from the right and present both of them. And then they have like a kind of like in the middle synopsis of it, right? So I think that, you know, I don't know. I have faith in our humanity. I think that we overall, people start to put pieces together. I think we're at a really strange time right now when it's like, no doubt in my mind, we are more divided today than we have in any other 39 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I think it's crazy because the whole message is about unity right now. And we're trying to, you know, that's like what the big message is right now behind BLM. And I think I look at all this and I'm like, this is crazy, because I felt like, just 5 years ago, we were way further along than where we're at now. And a lot of that is because of social media, and it's polarizing us. And I see it in my own family and friends. You know, the people that are on the left have dug their heels in more. The people on the right have dug their heels on even more.
Well, you know what's interesting is that if you actually look at the statistics, the both political parties that have their solid base, and the way that they judge this is by people who are going to vote that way no matter what. Essentially, that's your base, right? That's your strong base. Both the left and the right, their base, if you combine them, is less than independents, people who swing between either party. So it also may be one of these things. And social media does a very effective job of doing this. It tends to amplify the loud voices and create the perception that maybe it is more polarized. But the reality may actually be It's not. In fact, it may be more quiet people sitting around going,
no, it's not
this
true.
Is crazy.
They, in fact, I thought it was a documentary, but maybe it was another article I read. They actually had the analytics on this, and it's the data on
both parties.
Yeah.
If you look at the – okay, so if you – and they've done independent studies. If you look at the Republican Party, it moved over to the right a little bit. If you look at the Democrat Party, it moved over a lot further to the left. But more voters today call themselves independent than ever before. Mm. In fact, you can't win an election without winning a decent chunk of independents. So, for example, when they do primaries, if you have like a bunch of Democrats trying to win the primary to be the Democrat elect for, you know, to run for president, the way they campaign is way more extreme to that left base than when they're actually doing the general election. Because now they have to appeal to
everybody,
to independents. So it may be one of those things. I mean, look, if you follow fitness on social media, what does it look like? It looks like everybody's ripped. Everybody's freaking jacked. You know, everybody's having beast mode workouts. Like, I've worked in gyms most of my life. That's not the truth.
You see,
that's
like one or two of those guys.
Maybe like a month, you know?
Yeah. Well, they just come in and out.
Yeah. You almost never, they stand
out. They're just posing.
Yeah. Most people in the gym, there's a bias for people who want to be fit. And still in there, it looks pretty damn average.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you see on social media.
Well, since we opened up the can of politics, did you guys see basically like Joe Rogan, like... Who was it? Donald Trump was asking to see if he could get like a
debate.
Host a debate.
Yeah, so Rogan interviewed, I can't remember his name, dude. He was that fighter. He's in...
Tim Kennedy.
There you go. Man. Interviewed him, great interview, but he brought it up.
Yeah.
And Rogan's like, I would love to host a debate, a three-hour discussion between Biden and Trump.
Never would happen.
And Trump immediately tweeted out,
yeah,
I'm down. Make this happen. Never would this happen.
I know.
Never. It would be a 3-hour unscripted discussion.
Oh,
there's no
way.
It'd
be amazing. Yeah. No teleprompters. Yeah, let's do this.
It would never.
Why not?
Why not?
Dude?
Yeah, dude. Why like not? This that is the be... era of long form. You know, like let's talk about all your ideas.
Hey, and I don't care.
And see who has the better ideas.
I don't care what side you're on. Okay, left or right or in the middle. You got to lose respect for the guy that's not willing to do that.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, they know that.
Come on.
You got to be confident in your ideas.
Politics is about winning elections. And they know that if you talk for 3 hours or 2 hours and you get tough questions, that your opponent's team or whatever is going to take snippets about shit you said. You're going to give them political fodder for the next 5 years.
I'm just so sick of the sound bites, you know? Like, I want to know exactly, like, where we stand with both their ideas.
Oh, first of all, Biden would do terribly. He's just not doing well speaking right now.
He's having a hard time.
Trump would probably do better, except Trump would
say some crazy shit.
He put his foot in his mouth. That would definitely... It's just too risky, but I would love it. Are you kidding me?
Oh,
a real debate?
Give me some popcorn.
Not a pretend debate, but like a real one?
It doesn't even have to be a debate, just a conversation. I would love a 3-hour dialogue about just everything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just let them talk about their views on all kinds of different policies and just let's hear what they have to say and how they feel. But I think it would be a great conversation.
Oh, that would be
amazing.
It would be the most viewed debate of all time if they did that.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I think
but
so.
But they would never. No way they would let
so, them. So, you know, Sal, you sent over an article, I think it was yesterday, that I read. I think it was regarding Peloton originally, but it goes into just like the future of fitness.
Yeah.
I think I read, this was like 2 or 3 months ago, I shared on the podcast that, 23%, I think is what it was, that said that they will never return to the gym.
Oh, like people who work out?
Yeah. So they'll never return to the gym. Then another quarter said that they're uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that number is now creeped up to 50% of the people are saying they'll never go back, dude. Mm-hmm.
As they're opening right now.
Yes. And that article at Salson, they're, you know, just talking about that we may be in the middle in the fitness space of a new era. Just the way fitness is done differently. Like maybe the gym boxes are going to just ultimately die or become very much like these private spa type of places. And then most people.
Some massive change is going to happen for sure.
Well, So part of me, look, I grew up in the gym business. I ran big gyms.
So
I have a lot of friends that own these companies. And so I love them. But the model for a long time was not a great one. I mean, let's look at big box gym. Literally, this is what they rely on. They rely on people buying a membership and not coming.
Yeah.
Because if everybody showed up and had a membership, they would not be able to service all of them. They have to shut the doors. Yeah. That's how many members they have, and that's how many people who don't go to the gym.
It'd be interesting to see that statistic of what exact percentage. Like, I think we have ideas because we were in it for a long time, but I would love to see that, because this time with COVID and everybody being home and looking at their finances and these economic uncertain times, like, I bet there's a lot of people that have actually like kind of calculated, like, you know what, man, I was paying that gym membership for like 15 months and I didn't even go but one time. Like,
it's only $10 a month. Yeah, but I don't use it.
Yeah, and if you do the math on that, I could have bought a squat rack and a barbell and some plates and I could just have it in my garage. Like, why wouldn't I just do that?
Yeah, I mean, I see that as one, you know, market too. I also saw another article about like grocery stores and how everybody just hates the experience. You know, it's one of those things. Like, if you put all these things that you think are so safe and keeping everybody away from each other, all this, like, nobody likes that, you know? Like, how long are you gonna do that before you're just like, dude, just let me, like, just ship it all to my house? Yeah. You know, I'm not going anymore.
Well, I mean, so, because, okay, back to the fitness, right? What you saw with the fitness space, because, again, we've been in there for a long time, what did we see? We saw big boxes explode. This was the late 90s, early 2000s. And then you saw creeping in small boxes, high service, high dollar, low volume boxes. You can maybe even put CrossFit in that category, but you see these boxes pop, these small type facilities popping up everywhere, competing with the big box, low price, you know, don't show up, prime time packed type of of business plan or whatever. So it was already kind of, there was already some shifts happening. I mean, when I started at 24 in 1997, back in 1997. An all-club membership, which was only 100 clubs, I think, at the time, 120 clubs. Now they had, you know, I don't know, 500 or whatever. It was $45 or $50 a month, and it was like $400 a join. This was in 1997. Before the pandemic, I think you could get that for like a third or a fourth of the price. So they'd already gone down this huge slide of just cheapening everything, making it less and less expensive. And this is like the final nail.
It totally reflects what I talked about in the marijuana industry the other day.
Yeah.
It just, everybody started to open their own gym. You got boxes open all over the places. You got CrossFit's open. You got everybody that wants to be a gym owner in the last decade. And then it was a race to the bottom on the prices. Everybody undercutting how cheap they can make it. You got places like Planet Fitness with $10 a month.
Yeah.
So now it's got the place where you either got to be able to compete with Planet Fitness, with most private clubs are never going to be able to do that. So what it will do, it will open up the opportunity for like the small spa-like experience. Mm-hmm. The smaller box that really caters to their 500 members that come. Mm-hmm. And
you're gonna pay $150 a month, $200 a month for a real nice gym.
Yeah.
And everybody else gonna work out at home. I mean, fitness tech is exploding. So it's not like the market demand for fitness is going down. People still want to work out, but you have companies like Peloton, Crushin. And
this is what's interesting, because I thought for sure like a company like Equinox would be like all in, you know, with the higher value, like less people coming in, giving them service and all this. They decided to just keep it all shut down and go all in on the virtual. Mm-hmm. So they're speculating, you know, we just need to keep reinforcing that side of the business because this is just going to last.
Well, God, what a crazy shift for something that massive.
Crazy, right?
Are they shut down still?
As far as I know, that was their plan. That was their marketing plan.
I didn't know that. Wow. That's
interesting.
That's scary, dude. That's a big move. To go from being a brick and mortar and then to completely shift over to digital would be hard as fuck.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. Because again, I do see physical facilities that are smaller with higher service. I see those thriving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the big boxes, the huge, you know, old school $20 a month and work out with everybody.
Have either one of you guys talked to Scott lately? I haven't talked to Scott in a couple months.
No, but their doors are open right now, which is great.
They're open again, but I do know that they've gone hard in the virtual side. So I know but they're trying to do both, right? Which I think that's what you have to do.
Kind of have to.
I think the ones that will make it will be these smaller boxes that give you the spa, very personal feeling. And then in addition to that, also provide a virtual side. So you kind of have the best of both worlds. Like, we can complement the for you to be able to train from home, maybe with your personal trainer virtually. And then you also have the facility when you come in, which now allows you to travel and still have access to your favorite gym. And then in addition to that, when you're in town, you can come into your gym and you pay this flat rate that's going to be a premium rate, like you're saying, Sal. That'll be a lot more money, but the service will be much higher. I just don't see a gym staying alive anymore between the prices of 10 and $60 a month. It's just not, it's not feasible, especially with where
we're at right now.
No, especially where we're at right
now. Yeah, I think it'll take about, it'll probably take a couple of years to get at least that feeling out of people's bodies and minds, even if everything's open back up.
I mean, what do you guys with my friends, my family, this is the what I'm feeling. And of course, that's completely biased because it's just my small network of people. Mm-hmm. But I've got quite a few people that have moved to Peloton or moved to getting a gym inside their garage. And a lot of people are loving it. I have a much smaller percentage of people that are like, man, and don't get me wrong, by the way, I miss going to the gym. I miss the workouts. I'm the guy out of all of us that said I like that the most. So there is a part of me misses. But I've definitely gotten very used to training at home. And I think that a lot of people have too. And there's some perks to that. So
and the people who will go back to gyms are the hardcore people. Mm-hmm. I would. Mm-hmm. I like working out in gyms. I wouldn't mind going in there, risking it, washing my hands, wearing a mask, doing the thing, trying different machines. But the average gym goer is not that hardcore about it. If they could be active at home, they would, if they're consistent at all.
Yeah.
That market, again, it was shaky to begin with their model. So it's like the last straw on the camel's back?
Yes. I think you're right in terms of it being like the small, like high-end experience or the small dungeon type experience, right?
Well, speaking of which, you know Jillian Michaels, she got coronavirus, right? You guys heard about that?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, so she got corona. I guess she got better. And then she does this tweet or whatever talking about warning people to go back to – don't go to gyms. It's a bad place. You could get coronavirus, which is terrible for her to say because that's not where she got hers. She got hers because – she had a close friend of hers over her house who gave it to her. So she gave, but she does this thing about don't go to gyms because they're dangerous. And I do want to make this point. So far, the data shows that gyms are not places that people get sick. In fact, they're one of the more safer places where people can congregate and not get ill. They're doing a phenomenal job.
I don't think
it's. And she got better.
I don't believe that the facilities are so much safer. I think it's a bias of people that go. I think that
healthy.
I think,
and if you feel sick, you ain't going to the gym.
And if you're going to the gym right now, you fall in probably the hardcore category, right? So these are probably people that follow a diet, that probably train consistently, have been itching for their gym to open. You take those people following rules, keeping masks on, and then now the gym's like separating everybody, washing everything down. I think because of that, we're going to see very little cases pop up, which is silly why they're not opening it for those exact reasons, but I don't think it's necessarily a safer place. I can't imagine running, breathing, lots of people breathing heavy in a closed, hot, humid type of box would be the safest place for you to be. I just think it's the people that are going there are less likely.
That's probably why. And you're less likely to go work out if you don't feel good. The last thing you do is you want to work out.
Go to the gym.
Yeah, you ain't trying to do that. So anyway, I got a DM. I want to address something real quick because it was a good question somebody asked me. They said that they're on a diet. They're trying to cut, so they cut their calories, but they're afraid that they're not getting enough nutrients now because their calories are down low. And this is actually a real challenge for some people where, we get our nutrients from food. When you cut your calories, you do lower your nutrient intake. And so there's a couple things you could do. One, that's what I told them, focus on nutrient-dense foods so that your nutrient levels stay high even though your calories are low. Or this is one of the subsets of the population, I think a multivitamin might be beneficial, especially if you're going through a period where you're really cutting your calories low, either doing a long fast or you're a competitor, because it is hard for some people, especially if you're active on top of it, to get enough micronutrients when you're eating 1,400 calories in a day. So,
what would you say? Do you have? I know it's going to be very individualized, right? Like, do you kind of have like a number? Like, if you were training a client and they were on a diet and they're at a certain calorie intake, because obviously, okay, the guy who let's use me for an example, 5,000 calories, I'm cutting for a show. I'm dropping to 4,500 calories. I'm still getting plenty. Like I didn't.
Yeah, you're eating whole natural foods.
Yeah.
Animal meat.
Yes.
So eggs.
I'm not taking a multivitamin at that time. But
no, when I have female clients go below 1,500, especially if some of the ways they're getting their 1,500 calories is like, rice and the same kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Then I'll recommend.
Multivitamin. Then I see more value.
And then for a guy under 2,000 calories, especially if they have good lean body mass, sometimes I'll recommend a multivitamin. So that's the one time when that's might be something you want to consider when you're cutting your calories, because you eat less food, you also simultaneously tend to lower your nutrient intake.
Now, because of that too, is this where you would ever put somebody potentially on like a BCAA if their protein intake is low too? Like if they're cutting, you're cutting 1500 down to 1500 calories, sometimes it's even hard not only to hit your micros, but even your macros.
Yeah, but rarely, right? That's usually vegans. Vegans, yeah. I would have them take BCAAs. But even at 1500 calories, if you're a female eating 1500 calories or 1300 calories, you're probably like 130-pound, you know, 140-pound female.
Yeah.
You could get 110 grams of protein and have
still,
a nice ratio.
Still stay under there.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
This Quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
First question is from 713 Clown. I've heard some trainers say that they are anti-plank due to them training bad posture. What is your opinion on that?
I like this question. Who picked this?
I did.
Yeah. Good question, because this is, I mean, here's the thing. I can defend either side here.
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan of the plank for most people either, unless I'm teaching it, right? So I used to see trainers teaching it, right, that work for me all the time.
Most of them don't do it right.
And most of them don't. Most of them, it's just
very commonly misused exercise.
It's an easy kill 5 to 10 minutes with your clients, but not really do anything. Like, that's really what you
see. It reminds me of when trainers, they would do the plank.
Run laps.
Or they'd run outside for laps, or they'd have them do the wall sits.
Yes.
Like when you have nothing left to do.
So 100%.
I got 10 more minutes.
It's totally reminds
me. So your top three lazy trainer moves.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly what I think of right away. Now, that being said, Sal did a great YouTube video on our Mind Pump TV channel about an active plank. And you should read the comments. There's all kinds of people that it flipped. Everyone flipped their lid because of what he's teaching there. But I stand behind what he talked about 100%. And that's where you do like more of a tilt with your pelvis in order to activate your abs and your core. So it looks like you kind of have this little bit of a crown or a rounded back, which to the average person looks and goes, that doesn't look right. I've seen these other planks where they look way more flat. But then the problem with that is almost everybody, I'd say 90% of the population, has somewhat of an anterior pelvic tilt to where, you know, their butt is kind of sticking and they have more of an excessive arch in their low back. And then you go in a plank position and gravity is literally,
we're reinforcing those forces right in that spot.
Exactly. So for that reason, I don't like the plank, generally speaking. But if you train it like an active plank, or like what Sal taught on the YouTube channel, then I'm totally pro it.
Yeah, I don't like when trainers say things like, I don't like that exercise because it trains this pattern. Depends on who you're training. Could it reinforce bad posture on someone who's already got terrible posture, weak mid-back muscles, poor core stability, and they can't perform it properly? Yeah, of course. That means it's an inappropriate exercise for that person. Done properly and combined, because you're not just doing one exercise. If you're working out, you're not just doing planks. You know, I could also say don't bench press. That's bad for bad posture too.
Right, right.
But you're not just bench pressing in your workout. You're doing rows and you're focusing on, you know, scapular mobility, and it depends on the individual that I'm training. Very rarely do I tell a client never do an exercise unless they can't perform it properly. They don't have enough mobility, enough stability, in which case we'll avoid the exercise. But if they can do it properly and it's part of a good program, it's much more complex than just looking at the exercise alone and saying, this isn't good because this encourages, you know, whatever. In combination with other movements, a plank can be awesome. My favorite way to use a plank is if with advanced clients, I like to combine it with another exercise in a superset. So I like to do like I like to do a plank and then move to like a physio ball crunch or vice versa. That can be real good. With beginner clients, it helps me teach them how to control their pelvic position. And 9 out of 10 times, they do them off their knees. Most people they don't have enough strength to control their pelvic position in a full plank. So I have them go down to the knees, and then we get them to squeeze their abs and control that position.
Well, in that regard, I use the plank a lot of times as like a transitionary type of exercise for people that don't have the type of strength, especially in an extended plank position where, you know, I want them to do push-ups. And a lot of people can't maintain the proper form there and have their core drawn in and everything else activated to support while they're doing push-ups. So I find value in that in terms of slowing down and really emphasizing just the stability portion of, you know, and how they should be feeling it and where they should be feeling it as a teaching type of an exercise. But, you know, there's places for it. It's all in how you program it for sure. And, you know, like I do like the version that you teach on YouTube much better as opposed to just going for the flat plank that's going to reinforce, you know, a lot of positions there in the lower back.
Well, I think that's the problem that some trainers have with it is when you understand what the purpose of the exercise is, and then you see how most people do it, you go like, okay, that's defeating the purpose. Mm-hmm. So then it makes it seem like, oh, that's a worthless exercise, or you shouldn't even do it because it, like Sal said, it reinforces these bad patterns. But yeah, if you learn how to do it properly, then it doesn't defeat the purpose whatsoever. So it can be a phenomenal exercise. It's just that most people do it wrong. And it's harder to take a client who you haven't really taught. We talked about this on the podcast the other day about like training people and, you know, from what do we consider intermediate, beginner, or advanced, right? Like as far as like where their skill level is. And if I have a client on an exercise like that, it's really hard to cue somebody how to get into that position. They're going to default to like their bad patterns right away. So that's where it's challenging. If you're a good coach though, and you give good cues to get them in there, which is again why I like that video that Sal does, because that cue is teaching them what they need to kind of engage the entire time. And once that person learns an active plank really well, they can do a more traditional flat plank because they know what muscle they're trying to engage, mm-hmm. versus showing someone, here, get down on a plank.
And then just hold it.
Yeah, and then just hold it, you know, because then they're just holding it with their hip flexors. They're just, and right. then that's why they can do it for 9 minutes, you know, in that position, because they're not really activating their core.
Next question is from Health Coach Liz. NASM teaches flexibility training before strength. You guys have said you train your clients for strength first, so now I'm confused.
Okay, so I think I know what they're asking here. Okay, so static stretching before you work out and lift weights, usually a bad idea, and here's why. We got to look at the details. When you hold a muscle in a static stretch, and a static stretch is like I go down to touch my toes and I hold that stretch for 30 seconds, or I'm on the floor and I stretch my quad and I just hold it in that position for 30 seconds. Those are static stretches, the old school PE stretches that your teachers would have you do.
Does NASM teach that?
Well,
stability is their first. So
I was going to say, is this person correct here before we start defending?
But I think I know why they say this. I think they're a little confused, so I'll get there.
They're addressing, yeah, the imbalances first.
So yes,
yeah.
Thank you, Justin. Exactly. Yeah. So look at the details. Again, so you're holding a stretch for a long period of time. What that does is it tells the central nervous system to weaken its signal to that muscle. So if I hold my pec in a static stretch for 30 seconds or 60 seconds, and this is why you actually get longer ranges of motion. If you're holding a stretch for 30 seconds, you notice it starts to get deeper and deeper. Your CNS turns off essentially a little bit for that muscle. So you lose connection. Now, why is that not good for strength training? Well, you don't want to go into a strength training workout with your muscles partially turned off. That can cause problems, can cause instability, and could cause injury. However, there are times when this may be appropriate. This may be appropriate when antagonistic muscles may be getting in the way of proper form. So in right. layman's terms, let's say I'm doing a row, which in the row, I want to bring my shoulders back and I want to squeeze that mid-back area, but my chest is just so tight mm-hmm. that I can't get proper form. It's just getting in the way. So it's hard for me to act. I'm already weak in my mid-back, but now I got these tight pec muscles pulling me forward. Mm-hmm. What can I do? If I static stretch my chest before I do the rows, my CNS weakens the signal to my chest, allowing it now to kind of get out of the way a little bit so I have better form. This is what you're seeing in NASM. They're teaching you to static stretch muscles that may be tight that are preventing.
To get into optimal posture.
That's well, it.
And a yeah. Yeah, better, I don't even like using static stretch here. It's corrective stretching.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and that's the difference, right? They're both static holds, right? They both.
But they're doing it correctively.
But they're doing it for corrective purposes. So you're in a better position when you go to exercise, which is what we do with mobility, right? So when our MAPS Prime, this is what MAPS Prime is all about. So in a perfect world, you're not just running anabolic by itself or performance by itself or aesthetic by itself. You also have Prime to complement it, and you take yourself through the assessment. So in a perfect world, you go through the assessment in Prime, and if you haven't followed the webinar that Justin did, it's free. You could watch it. I highly recommend it to everybody, especially if you don't have the program.
What's the URL for that, Doug? Is it Prime?
MapsPrimeWebinar.com.
MapsPrimeWebinar.com.
So the idea is that you go through that, you assess yourself. During that assessment, it's going to help point out the areas that you need to work on corrective stretching. Mm-hmm. And then your idea is to do those movements, those priming movements that we tell you to do in Maps Prime based off of how you pass or fail your assessment. That then becomes your staple corrective stretches you do before you go into training. We talk about priming and mobility because it's more of an active stretch. And NSM still uses kind of the older model of
we've
static.
We've evolved past that, and that was where we all kind of started out. But really, like, mobility training is strength training. So that's the difference in terms of, like, you know, gaining access to different ranges, but you have strength in those ranges. So it's not just about attaining this passive range of motion, which you get from static stretching, which theoretically you can open up the ability for you to then get into better posture, which is going to perform better movements. This actually, you know, takes you through that process of teaching your body how to acquire and recruit, you know, strength within each angle of that range of motion. And so that's why I've actually preferred mobility training, and I'm completely abandoned most static stretching. And really, static stretching for me, like, if I use it at all, would be at the end of my workout.
Dude, priming is you can't even compare proper priming to the old ways of corrective, you know, stretching before you work. There's no comparison. In fact, we just got tagged in the forum by somebody who they've listened to us talk about it on the podcast all the time, didn't really buy into it, finally did a real priming session.
Oh yes.
And they're like, this is their quote: "Totally has changed my perspective on priming, and I'm going to prioritize it each time I work out," because they noticed just way more connected to the workout. It's just a much better way of getting your body ready for your workout. And that webinar that he did is free, by the way. It's mapsprimewebinar.com. Go on there. Just do me a favor. Try it out. It doesn't cost anything. He literally teaches you how to do it. And then go do a little workout and see how you feel.
I'm really curious where this person is getting the flexibility. Because it's been so long since I've looked at NASM, right? So I pulled up, I know their OPT model, right? So I pulled up their five-step OPT model. And they don't start in flexibility. It's phase one for them is stabilization, endurance.
Yeah,
it's stabilization, endurance. Then it goes into strength, endurance. Then it goes into hypertrophy. And then it goes into maximal strength. Then it goes into power.
Right. The only way I think they talk about
corrective.
It is what we said.
Yeah. Right. That's the only way I can imagine that they would even recommend that, because
that's through their squat assessment where they'll recommend certain corrective stretches, like you mentioned.
Right.
That's literally it. Yeah. They want stability, which is strength training. They want to get your joints fortified so that way you can build on top of that.
Next question is from Chai Latte. What correctional exercises would you recommend for clients with knocking knees?
Okay, so if you're just a normal person listening to the podcast, you're interested in health and fitness, and you want kind of a general idea of how to correct poor form or movement in yourself, here's a good rule of thumb. It's not fail-proof. This is not like 100% every time. A trainer is always going to be able to do a better job of this with you. But if you're on your own, here's just kind of an easy way to figure out how to correct a problem. Strengthen the opposite movement. Okay, so if your knees go together, then you could technically correct it by strengthening your knee by strengthening your knees going out.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So like clamshells would be an exercise. Any kind of abduction, that's when you bring the leg out. So you could get a resistance band, attach it to your foot.
Leg swings.
Straight leg swings with no resistance. Like, do the opposite of what the problem is, strengthen, I should say, the opposite, with good form, by the way, because sometimes you can fool yourself. If your form is wrong, you may actually be making the problem worse. So with perfect form, and that's kind of an easy rule of thumb to follow to figure these things out. Now, if you want to take it a step further, then you could go hire a trainer that tends to be expensive, or if you want to kind of go in between, then you could do like Maps Prime or Prime Pro, where we take you through assessments and then you can kind of figure that out for yourself.
Yeah, I think that 100% what you said will at least help, right? It may not completely fix the root cause. That's the only thing, right? So knocked knees, even strengthening the antagonist muscles like you're talking about right now with tube walking, leg swings, this will for sure help that issue. But if the root cause is related to the foot, which is what I would say that it is 80% of the time, you've got to work on that. So a lot of times, this was when Dr. Brink like blew my mind, because just as a trainer, when I saw knee stuff, I almost always went to the hip. I don't know why. Just wasn't taught well.
All of us did. Nobody talked about the feet.
Yeah,
that was like in every certification. They had you do that.
Yeah. So, when I met with him and he just picked me to pieces, and the first thing we started with was my feet, and it just made so much sense to me too. Like when you think about what we do with our children and putting them in shoes right away, we train our kids to have weak ass feet. It's like, it's very, I'm serious.
That's a t-shirt.
Right?
WAF?
Weak ass feet. No weak ass feet here. That's I'm going to get Max one that says that. That's actually a cool idea.
That's good.
I'm going to give him a shirt.
Picture of the bottom of his foot. He's got like a six pack.
No WAF. No WAF here, right?
Yeah.
It's true, though. It really is. And it's actually, I've talked on the show. This is a major focus for me with him, is because we do. We throw him in shoes very early, and then we stay in shoes our whole life. Like, we never really develop our feet, ever. Unless you're some kid that grew up on the farm and didn't have shoes and ran around the dirt and stuff like that, you probably have pretty developed feet. Everybody else, not so much. And so when you have an area like that that's ground, that's responsible for connecting you to this earth, and they're weak, you know, they fold in, they roll out, one tilts more than the other, and that's what we get here, is you get a foot that, you know, collapses inward, you know, pronates in, and that ends up knocking the knees and internally rotating the femur. And it ends up causing knee pain, hip pain, even low back pain, all because of this if we don't address it. And part of the fixing is definitely what Sal said. And then the other part is most likely related to foot stuff. And then you need to address it. And all this is in MAPS Prime Pro.
Yeah, and now you put both those techniques together, and you know, you started addressing your workouts. You know, you're going for your barbell squats and things where you'll see this kind of come out once you start loading that. You know, the helpful technique of priming ahead of time, where you take some isometric components where I'm pushing my knee out and I'm holding for 15 seconds. I'm really connecting to that, and I'm enhancing that stability and that portion of you know what I want my leg to stabilize and control. And then I see that in my lift improve. And so it's, you know, you put all this together and, you know, it's going to start really addressing this in the right direction.
Yeah, it was such a great experience when we met with Brink, because it was in our space, it's fitness. And it was something that we were all completely ignorant to. We didn't even know that we didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So it wasn't like, oh, I know the feet, but you know, there's some stuff I don't know. I didn't even know to look there. Yeah. I'd never been taught, never did. Everybody I ever trained wore shoes in the gym.
Yeah.
Wasn't an issue. I looked at the hips, knees, elbows.
You can see shoulders. The wear and tear on their feet. Dude, where they're holding the most pressure.
It was so crazy, because once we started paying attention and understanding, I cannot unsee it now.
Yeah.
Now if I see someone in sandals or barefoot or even my own feet, I'm like, wow, they are so deformed because of our shoes and because we never walk barefoot. So it's one of those, it's so many things happen from the feet.
Unfortunately, in the free webinar that I did, the Prime Pro one, I didn't address feet and wrists, just because in our Prime Pro program, we address every major joint, and it would have been way longer than an hour.
Camera zoom on your foot.
Yeah. yeah. And I don't have.
You got the prettiest one of all.
I don't know. I have a special toe, so I don't know if I have the prettiest feet. I think Doug has the prettiest feet out of all of us. Okay. So yeah, you have the ugliest with your hammer toes.
Oh yeah,
looking at everybody's feet?
Yeah, I see everybody's feet. Come on. I'm the guy who paints his toenails. Of course I see everybody's feet. You know what I'm saying? So,
wow.
But my point was that this is all in Prime Pro. So when you talk about corrective exercises, two of these questions are related to this. Corrective exercises, setting your workout up, priming, assessing, like that's what those programs are all about. Like it's everybody ideally should own those or have those in their library and utilizing them as either a tool that they intermittently go back to and refer to whenever they have issues, or at the bare minimum with Prime and assessing yourself so that you can set every workout optimally for yourself.
Next question is from Malls Fit. What do you think about float therapy?
You know, what an interesting experience. I've done it now maybe four times.
We did it that one time.
And we did.
Together.
Yeah. Yeah. Not in the
not
same.
Not in the same tub, though.
Yeah, we were in the same tub.
Yeah. Yeah. Clarify. Yeah.
What's touching me?
Liar. Yeah.
It's so, okay, for people who don't know, float therapy, you lay in, you know, it's what is it? Body temperature water.
Salt water.
Highly, yeah, lots and lots of salt. So you literally float on top of it. You're inside of this you know, cocoon or
it's
whatever.
Like a pod or something.
It's a pod. You close it down. There's no light, no sound, and you're floating. And essentially, it reduces or it's trying to eliminate all sensory that's coming into the brain. So you're just sitting there and floating. It's an interesting experience.
Yeah.
It's definitely like meditation. It's very similar to meditation. When, for me, time flew. Once I got settled, it was like weird that an hour passed by. It felt like only 10 minutes. Then when I came out, I felt like my CNS was reset. In fact, I was a little sensitive.
Yeah.
I was a little sensitive to light.
The lights are bright. Yeah. And yeah, like sounds were really loud. Yeah. It was interesting because it really does like just, it takes out all those, the excess like stimulus. Like you don't even realize you're taking in every day and you're always worried about, you know, looking out to see if somebody's over here, over there. Like you just shut all that down at least for that period of time.
But if it forces you, here's my opinion on it. If it's a great way for you to, and again, we talked about this at the beginning of the podcast, biohacks, right?
Yeah.
The reason why I think this may be a valuable biohack for people isn't necessarily because the float tank is magic, but rather because it may be a way for people to shut off for an hour.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why it's making a comeback. This shit's been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been around since, what, the 60s and the 70s, right?
Yeah. 70s, yeah.
Yeah, it's been around forever, and it was not popular at all 10, 15 years ago. It's popular now because back to the intro to the show is that we're talking about tech, man, and how addicted everybody is to it and plugged in all
just
the time.
Stimulated.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We are like overstimulated all day long, and so to take you and put you in pitch black, dark, floating, like suspending, feeling like you're in space. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it feels like, right? If you could feel like what it feels like to be like anti-gravity, it almost feels like that, where you're just floating out. You don't feel the edges of it. And with no sound, no light, no anything for an hour, when was the last time you did that? You don't even do that when you sleep at night. I guarantee everybody listening right now, in your bedroom, you've got a couple red blinking lights or green lights or your phone or a little bit of the light creaking in.
There's a difference between being unconscious and quiet and being conscious and quiet.
Oh, yeah.
It's very different. So when you're in the float tank, you could fall asleep. But a lot of the time you're not. You're just consciously quiet, which this is a practice. This
everybody should do it one time.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's training wheels for meditation. Like there's people out there like me that have a hard time blocking everything out, being conscious of your breathing and being able to control it. I mean, obviously, that's a practice and you have to keep doing it constantly to get good at it. But I think this is like a tool. I could look at that as be like, oh, here's what it's supposed to feel like. And, you know, I got something out of it.
Well, okay. So when I look at the time it takes to do the float and the cost, in my opinion, I think your better value is massage. I do. I think laying down quietly, having someone work on your body.
Oh, well, those are awesome too.
Get human touch. A good therapist, I think, will give you, unless you're somebody who doesn't like it. I know there are people who don't like massage, in which case, fine, do something else. But if you don't mind it, you like the touch, you like some, you know, you're quiet, you're not connected to your phone, stimulus is down, but the only stimulus you're getting is good stimulus from the quiet music and the person massaging you. I think that could be valuable.
That's an interesting argument. I think they're way different.
Totally, but I mean, yeah. If you do one or the other, which one do you think is more valuable?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think I think you should do both at least a one time to see what it does for you, right? Because I think both of those things can be like life-changing. If you've never had a good deep tissue massage by somebody who really knows what they're doing and you get one, it's like, holy shit, I'm going to try and find a way to put this in my budget every single month or every week if I can, because it's amazing. And the same thing goes for float. I mean, some people experience it and be like, whatever. Other people experience it and be like, whoa, I've never been that deep into my thoughts in so long. And I think that part of it, I think, is very valuable. So I think everybody should at least try it and go in with a
timer.
Done talking.
Yeah, it's when he keeps going, you know, just
Zelda kicks off.
Yeah. Piss off, Justin. That's all I have to say about it. Go do it.
Look, Mind Pump is recorded on video and audio. If you like listening to us, imagine how you're going to feel when you get to look into our faces.
Gorgeous.
Go on YouTube, check out Mind Pump Podcast. You can also find all of us on Instagram, including the King Doug. He's on Instagram too. You can find him at Mind Pump Doug. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin, me at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.